So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 27, Attack by Chandavega on the City of Paranjana, text number 12. Yukteshvevam pramatasya Katumba sakta chetasa Asasara savaikalo Yo priya priya yoshitam. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Thus King Paranjan, being attached to fruitive activities, karma kandya, as well as kith and kin, and being obsessed with polluted consciousness, eventually arrived at that point, not very much liked by those who are overly attached to material things. Please repeat. Thus King Paranjana, being attached to fruitive activities, karma kandya, as well as kith and kin, being obsessed with polluted consciousness, eventually arrived at that point, not very much liked by those who are overly attached to material things. In this verse, the words priya yoshitam and apriya are very significant. The word yoshit means woman, and priya means dear or pleasing. Death is not very much welcome for those who are too much attached to material enjoyment, which culminates in sex. There is an instructive story in this connection. Once, when a saintly person was passing on his way, he met a prince, the son of a king, and he blessed him, saying, "My dear prince, may you live forever." The sage next met a saintly person and said to him, "You may either live or die." Eventually the sage met a brahmachari devotee and he blessed him, saying, "My dear devotee, you may die immediately." Finally the sage met a hunter and blessed him by saying, "Neither live nor die." The point is that those who are very sensual and engage in sense gratification do not wish to die. Generally, a prince has enough money to enjoy his senses. Therefore, the great sage said that he should live forever. For as long as he lived, he could enjoy life, but after his death, he would go to hell. Since the brahmachari devotee was leading a life of severe austerities and penances, in order to be promoted back to Godhead, the sage said he should die immediately, so he need not continue to labor hard and could instead go back home, back to Godhead. A saintly person may either live or die, for during his life he's engaged in serving the Lord, and after his death he also serves the Lord. Thus this life and the next are the same for a saintly devotee. For in both he serves the Lord. Since a hunter lives a very ghastly life due to killing animals, and since he will go to hell when he dies, he advised to neither live nor die. King Paranjana finally arrived at the point of old age. In old age, his senses lose their strength, and although an old man desires to enjoy his senses, and especially sex life, he is very much miserable because his instruments of enjoyment no longer function. Such sensualists are never prepared for death. They simply want to live on and extend their life by so-called scientific advancement. Some foolish Russian scientists also claim that they are going to make man immortal through scientific advancement. Under the leadership of such crazy fellows, civilization is going on. Cruel death, however, comes and takes away all of them, despite their desire to live forever. This type of mentality was exhibited by Hiranyakashipu. When the time was ripe, the Lord personally killed him within a second. The verse again. Yukteshvevam pramatasya katumba sakta chetasa asa sada savaikalo yo priya priya yoshitam. Thus King Paranjan, being attached to fruitive activities, karmakanda, as well as kith and kin, being obsessed with polluted consciousness, eventually arrived at that point, not very much liked by those who are overly attached to material things. Namo Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Purustai Bhutai Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paskatya De Satarane Virtu Sara Harascha Hum. Krishna says he comes and he takes everything away in the form of death. So death is not very much appreciated. We sing happy birthday to people, but we never sing happy death day to you, happy death day to you, happy death day dear Prabhu, happy death day to you. But neither birth nor death are actually very pleasant. But somehow or another we think birth is good and death is bad. But as soon as we take birth, it's inevitable that we have to die. No one has ever taken birth and not died so far. When Yudhisthira Maharaj was asked by his friend, the Yaksha, Yudhisthira Maharaj was in the forest, his brothers had been killed by drinking the water from a lake, and he was about to drink the water from the same lake when one Yaksha came and told him not to do it. If he wanted to do it, he had to answer some questions. So one of the questions was, what is the most amazing thing? And he said, Ahani, ahani, bhutani, gacchanti yamalayam, shesha stavar ischanti, kimascharyam atakparam. That day after day, we're seeing so many living entities entering into the jaws of death. But those who remain behind think that they're going to live forever. In other words, to put things in the proper perspective, is that in spite of the fact that they claim that, for instance, Belgium is a scientifically advanced country, civilized country, but in spite of all the years of scientific advancement, still the death rate remains the same. It's 100%. And although they may endeavor for many, many years in the future, we can expect the death rate to remain more or less the same. So that's the real problem. Krishna says, Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadi Dukkha Doshanudarshana. One who's in knowledge, he knows actually what is the problem. The problems are not whether or not our television set is three-dimensional or not. It is not a big problem. Although they may spend so many millions of euros or billions of euros to create a 3D television set, but that will not solve our real problem. The real problem is that after taking birth, we have to grow old. And then we become diseased, and we have to leave this body, and according to our activities in this lifetime, we take our next body. The real problem is ignorance, because we don't know what kind of body we're preparing ourselves for. We may imagine that what we're doing now is very important, but how important is it really? According to Bhagavad Gita, we're eternal. So that's good. It's good that we're eternal. Presently, we're eternally in hell. So that's not very good. We're eternally in the material world. And therefore, being eternal doesn't have very much benefit if we're going to eternally suffer. And if we're eternally in ignorance, that means we won't know what to do to get out of our suffering. So our real problem is finding out how to get free from our suffering and enter into the actual platform that we're looking for, which is positive happiness. So that's the problem. And therefore, to utilize this rare human form of life to solve that problem as value. Everything else is considered shrama evahi kevalam. Now, of course, if we don't recognize the fact that we're eternal souls, if we identify ourselves with this body, then we only have a few years, a very short period of time, in order to try to, as they say in one American commercial, get all the gusto you can, because you only go once around. It was a beer commercial. In other words, if we're only going to live for a very short period of time, and after all, even if we live for 100 years, compared to eternality, it has no meaning whatsoever. Just like we've heard that analogy, if we gave everyone here €1 million, but we only gave it to you for a millionth of a second, it would not be very much appreciated. Similarly, 1 millionth of a second compared to our lifetime is a long time comparing our lifetime to eternity. Compared to eternity, our present lifetime has no meaning whatsoever. But it has meaning if we utilize it for getting out of our misconceptions. Now in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna begins with explaining that we're not the body. He simply doesn't say as a dogmatic statement, but he says as a scientific statement that everyone's body is changing. So who can deny that their body is changing? Everyone has probably notices that, unless we're very unobservant. But most people are observant enough to notice how their body changes. But the person who's noticing the changing of the body is not changing. Otherwise, if he was changing, he would notice his body was changing, because he would be a different person as the body changed. So there's one consistent factor, and that factor is always the person who's conscious. And what he's conscious of, his body or other people's bodies or other circumstances or situations, that's constantly changing from one moment to the next. Therefore, the conclusion is that the person who's aware and perceiving the changes is not changing, is eternal and unaffected by material circumstances or changing or changes. But owing to ignorance or misconceptions, we don't know who we actually are. We only identify ourselves with what we're aware of, namely the changing body that we're in. Therefore, real knowledge is to find out who we are, and get free from the misconception of identifying ourselves with the changing universe. That will actually be valuable. Unfortunately, people don't recognize that, and they take their temporary circumstances as everything. And they think that their life is successful when they can gratify their temporary desires. Temporary desires means that along with the body that we've gotten also comes urges of the body. Vacha vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udra pasta vegam, etan vegam yovishaheti dira, sarvam apimam prativyam sashisha. So we take this as completely normal. As a matter of fact, generally speaking, we've been trained that this is the only necessities of life. The Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, don't claim that eating or sleeping or even mating and defending are unnecessary, but they're not the only things in life. They may be urges, for instance, the urge to eat, the mind's demands, the forces of the tongue, genitals in the belly, the urge to speak, the anger, the urges, the forces of anger. These may be definitely urges for the body, but not all of them are actually necessary to serve unlimitedly or without any consideration. In other words, an intelligent person, he considers before he does something. Pablo's dogs were used to show how people are conditioned. That is, Pavlov, he'd ring a bell and then feed some food to a dog. and that the dog would naturally salivate before he'd eat the food. But then after some time, he'd simply ring the bell, and the dog, expecting food, would begin to salivate, even if food wasn't presented. So this was known as stimuli, and then there is response or reflex. Now, if we're only dogs, if that's our mentality, of course, as soon as there's a stimuli, then immediately there'll be a response without any consideration of what to do or what not to do. As soon as we see something to eat, immediately we'll pounce on it like a tiger and eat it. But human life is meant for some kind of restraint or some kind of regulation. Otherwise, one becomes a disturbance to society. If a man walks down the street and sees a beautiful lady and only follows his senses, whatever they're demanding, then it would create quite a problem in society. If everyone was given the right to serve their senses without any restriction, we'd have a very disturbed society. And actually, we do have a very disturbed society. And the society is not disturbed because people are being restrained from gratifying their senses, because as we can see, as society goes on and people have less restraints to gratifying their desires, they're becoming more disturbed. Otherwise, why is in England, when you're there, they say that if you go downtown London, you get photographed 2,000 times within a day. There are so many cameras. There are cameras looking at cameras. Everyone has a television surveillance camera watching everyone. And why are they watching everyone? It is not that the people watching you are sightseeing. No, they're watching you because no one has any trust. They're watching what you're doing, that you don't steal their camera. Or you don't engage in some other kind of illegal activity, which only a lawyer can know how many activities are illegal. But in any case, people have become quite uncontrolled, and somehow or another they're trying to keep them within control. Now, if freedom to gratify our senses in any way we wanted was the ultimate goal of life, why so much attempt to keep everyone under control? Because unrestricted sense enjoyment causes problems both for the unrestricted sense enjoyer and for everyone else. Therefore, the aim of life is not to gratify the senses unrestrictedly, but it's to minimize the sense enjoyment, what's necessary, and therefore look for some higher stage of awareness, namely to discover our eternal identity. Because our real problems are, as I said at the beginning, janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi, dukkha, dosha, nudarshana. What we fear the most is not that, you know, well, what do they get everyone upset about? Global warming, as if it's warming in here in Bradesh. But anyhow, they're creating these fears within people, for instance, global warming. But, as we can see, there's nothing to worry about, at least not in Bradesh. Every other country in the world may heat up and burn, but Radhadesh will have enough water to put out the fire. In any case, they put fear in people that you're going to die. Well, it should be on the news. Don't worry about you're going to die, because it doesn't matter what we do, you are going to die. There's nothing to worry about, because there's nothing you can do about it. It's a waste of time. So people are actually worrying about ceasing to exist. They want to live forever in their paintings, in their sculpture, in their writings, in their children, in their dynasty. They want to somehow or another perpetually live, And even they sometimes they think, well, even I leave my body, they bury the body or burn it, it's going to rise up somehow or another, and me with it. Because people are afraid of death. And why are they afraid of death? Because they're afraid they're not going to be aware anymore of happiness. They won't be able to enjoy after they're dead. As I mentioned before, Srila Prabhupada was on going to the doctor, and going to the doctor, he passed by a movie theater on the way back, and it said, the title of the movie was, Is There a Sex After Death? So Prabhupada, he came back and gave a lecture, and he mentioned in the lecture that I saw this title of the movie, Is There a Sex After Death? So you should go out and tell everyone they don't have to worry because there is sex after death. And 8,400,000 species of life. So if the materialist knows that they'll actually be able to enjoy their senses after death, they won't fear death anymore. But that's not the point of life, is to enjoy the senses. As mentioned here, that a person who is growing old, they should not lament that now I can't enjoy my senses anymore, but instead they should try to understand that old age or disease or death or even taking birth again, their impetus is for our spiritual advancement. The material world was created by the Supreme Person not to encourage us to stay here forever and enjoy. That's why there are certain problems. There are encouragements to get out of our misconceptions, out of our illusion, and to get into our actual life, revive our actual existence, where there are no problems. But if we stubbornly refuse, we want to stay here forever and enjoy this material energy through different types of material senses, then there's nothing Krishna can do. Just like you may put up a sign, you may have some vicious dogs, Doberman Pinschers. They may have a history of attacking and eating people. And you put up a sign over the fence, which was covered with barbed wire, keep out, dangerous dogs. But if you're amongst a group of people who happen to like Doberman Pinschers and want to go in there and pet them, and in spite of all warnings and all obstacles, you climb over the fence, in spite of the fact that the barbed wire is sticking into you, and then you go over and jump down to pet the Doberman Pinschers as they're biting off your leg. And then you complain, you know, why do they put the Doberman Pinschers here for? No, they may have had the Doberman Pinschers, but they didn't invite you to come there and pet them. That was your problem. You created your own problem. Similarly, in the society, there is jails and there is laws. And they say, keep out, don't become a good citizen, don't get involved in illegal activities, try to follow the law of the state and avoid problems. But in spite of that, there is a class of people who want, for their own reasons, to rebel against the state, and then they get arrested and put into jail, and they complain. If the state was all good, then why did they create a jail? If the state, the government, was actually a good government, why did they create a jail? Well, they created a jail because of people like you, who aren't good, to protect the good citizens. Similarly, they may complain, why did Krishna create a world of imprisonment, where the soul is imprisoned? Because there are criminals like ourselves who come here. And we stay here as long as we don't refuse to rectify ourselves and want to remain with the criminal mentality that everything belongs to us, everything is meant for our service, that we're the center of the universe, there is no God, there is no higher cause of life. My only job in life is to serve myself at the expense of everyone else. So anyone who thinks like that, then they stay here in the material world perpetually. And as soon as one becomes a rectified criminal, agrees to follow the laws of the state, then he becomes subjected to becoming paroled or even released from prison. Similarly, we want to stay here tortured by old age, disease, and death, taking birth again, and then suffering the miseries of the body that we have, the mind that we have, other living entities, problems that they create for us, or the natural disturbances coming from hurricanes or winds or floods or whatever else. If we want to suffer all these problems, then we can stay here and keep on claiming that actually I'm the center of the universe and everyone should serve me and I should enjoy my senses to the utmost. On the other hand, if we utilize the senses in Krishna's service and satisfy them to the extent that's necessary to maintain the body in a healthy condition, and at the same time look for some kind of spiritual advancement, try to perform the activities that will help us release us from these misconceptions of life, so we can eventually arrive to realize our eternal identity in relation with the Supreme Eternal Person, then the result is that gradually our problems will be solved and we won't unnecessarily create more problems. But the scientists, they say, as Prabhupada mentions here, that somehow or another, by their endeavor, they're going to make us all eternal. Although they can't stop anything from changing, even for a fraction of a moment. If they could take one cell from their body and stop it from doing something for a moment without killing it, but even then it changes after they kill it. Let them hold one cell, one atom, in its place for one moment. And then we can appreciate they can do something. But they can't even do that. So if they can't stop one atom from changing, how are they going to stop this body from changing? So it is simply shravam eva hi kevalam, a waste of time. They claim so many things, but the very scientist who makes the claim, he himself is leaving his body, growing old, becoming diseased, and then dying. When I was 15 years old or 13 years old, I read in one little comic book, it said by the year 2000, the scientists will create a formula so that no one will die anymore. Everyone's going to live forever. Well, 2000 came and 2000 went. And they haven't made any progress whatsoever towards that. So trust no future, however pleasant, that idle talks regarding these things, Prabhupada says, for instance, the creation of matter from spirit, are just like so many different speculations. There's no basis to it. There's no experience to it. It's simply a mythology. It's science fiction. The only person who's ever been created out of dead matter was Frankenstein. And he also didn't enjoy a very long lifespan. Nor did his creator. But this is only that was the only time in history that it's happened so far. On the other hand, we ourselves are already alive, so that therefore, being alive already, we should not worry about this fact that the body is going to deteriorate and die, because there's nothing we can do about it. But the fact that we're going to be alive forever, we should consider, and consider where we want to be alive forever in, either here, or if there is a spiritual world, perhaps we might consider going there instead. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
This quote you gave about Yakshas being Yudhishthira.
Yes. It's actually Yamaraj, his father.
Personally, I heard it so many times, I quoted it so many times, but still, I find myself trapped in the same illusion. Everybody's dying, somehow going.
Yeah, because we're an illusion, because we can't stop from unnecessarily gratifying our desires, material desires. We keep us an illusion. But as we regulate our lives and try to fix our mind in Krishna consciousness through the process of sadhana bhakti, then gradually the illusion will go away. Gradually. But it's not that we can just decide that I don't want this illusion anymore without changing our activities to, and becoming more absorbed in Krishna consciousness. It's not possible. It's like a prisoner in the cell saying, I just decided I don't like jail cells. Well, he may not like jail cells. He may like the jail cell, but that's where he's going to be for a while, unless he changes his activities and somehow or another gets the pardon of the person who put him in jail in the first place. Yeah, we want the good and we don't want the bad that comes from wanting the good. We want the tail of the coin, but we want the head of the coin, but we don't want the tail. We want the head, we want the part of the hen that gives a golden egg, but we don't want the part that eats all the food to get it. Anything else? Yes. Well, the example is given, if you water the root of the tree, then the water goes to all the leaves and branches. But if you water each one of the leaf and branch, then no one gets served. So if we serve Krishna and he becomes happy, then we become happy and we help others become happy too. But if we try and make ourselves happy without making Krishna happy, then we can't become happy, because he's the actual source of happiness. It is not that when you water the root of the tree that all the leaves and branches dry up. No, that's actually how to give them the water. So similarly, when we serve Krishna, then automatically everyone else is served, including ourselves. Yes?
Normally you can be sick, but by our activities you're making somebody happy. It's somewhat implied that the person wasn't happy before.
Oh, there's unlimited happiness. There's no end to it. It's not that Krishna is in the spiritual world and he figured, I'm just too happy. I think I've reached my limit. I can't become any happier. No, there's no limit to happiness in the spiritual world. But that we can't understand right now, because there's quite a bit of limitations to our happiness. So what it means to have unlimited happiness, that we can't conceive of. What to speak of happiness based upon service and love? That's even more inconceivable, rather than just sense gratification. Yes? Well, here in the material world we have both, but they're all related to the state of our body and how we're experiencing it. But in the spiritual world, when we don't have a material body, we have only spiritual senses. There, everything is different varieties of experience of love for Krishna. Krishna is the center, and he's all unlimitedly attractive, and everyone loves him, and everyone else experiences the love that everyone else has for Krishna. And they experience the love that Krishna has for everyone else. And that's the source of all varieties of pleasure. Thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande Hari Bol.